Greetings to you from the church that meets at Martinsdale, Iowa. Sometimes we see one another in different places, and we're not, we think we know where one another's from, but we're not always sure. And so sometimes it's good for us to kind of let one another know. We originally were a rural congregation, and I guess basically still are, although we've kind of evolved in that agriculture is not as not many involved in it as there was at one time, and so I think we have one man and his son-in-law that are actively involved in agriculture now, and there's those of us that once were. One of the things that I was asked if I'd ever been here before, I've not been in this building. This gives you a chance to reminisce this a little bit, and I hope it doesn't become too dangerous. But I can't remember whether it's once or twice. I know I was way back when Brother Roy Loney was still alive, we was in his home at one time when he was here, and I think we might have been here one other time, I'm not certain. And then when I was sitting back there, that kind of got things rolling again about something probably none of you will ever remember, that I was in a Bible study over 59th and Kenwood in Kansas City under Brother Bill Hensley. And there was a meeting going on at Lawrence at that time, and I think Brother Wilford Landis had spent some time in that class also, and so he loaded some of us boys up and brought us over to Lawrence for the meeting that night, and then we went back over to the city, which I imagine was a pretty good trip then, compared to the way things are now. So I just had that, remembered that, and I thought that was pretty neat. I think one of the things that being able to speak about my personal experiences with sheep also allows me to do is to reminisce a little bit. When Cal first called me, he said, I want you to give exactly the lesson. Now, I'm not sure exactly where that was. Was you at Pleasant Hill at the two-week meeting? Okay. Barbara was. I just remember that he said, I want you to give it just exactly like you did then. Well, I guarantee you it won't be. And I think he understood that. But it does, as you talk about certain things, it allows you to reminisce a little bit. It brings up memories of different things. And so the fact that I did raise sheep for 50 years, certainly it had a little bit to do with it. But having said that, I can only share with you one person's experience and knowledge. And I'll be speaking from my own perspective and give you some of the experiences that I've had. And as I've tried to take those and relate them to sheep. Now, I want you to understand that I'm not telling you these things as this is how that I did them. I'm telling you that this is how I've learned that I should have done many of them. And it's kind of like raising children. Once you've got them raised, then you can do it. And so I think it's from that perspective that I'm going to be speaking. I guess my story begins when I was 10 years old. I think the age for joining 4-H is probably the same in all states, which is then at least was 10 years old, and I think it still is. And in the rural agriculture community in South Central Iowa that we lived in, kids in class at school turned 10, there was some information that would be passed around, which would provide the opportunity of how you could join 4-H. And of course, that's something I wanted to do, and so I did. When we considered what my project would be, at that time, Dad had milking cows, dairy cows. I think he had 20-some, which at that time was a low, medium-sized herd. Today, that would equate to somewhere between 200 and 2,000, probably. Now that's just the differences that take place in agriculture. He also raised hogs, and that was called the mortgage lifter. And that paid the bills. And so it was decided that I would take pigs as my project. So happens that the county that we lived in, and still do for that matter, had some of the most outstanding purebred breeders of hogs in the nation. In fact, we had a nation or a neighbor that had a world champion at one time. And so there were a lot of those within the county, and we knew one that was fairly close there, and we went and bought a couple of gilts, those that were bred to have pigs, and those were going to be my project for the year. At about the same time, I think Dad was probably wanting to increase the farm income as well as take advantage of maybe some wasted area that the sheep would clean up. And so he bought some sheep. He didn't know any more about them than I did. It was a new, totally new experience. Well, I took pigs for the first 2 years as my project to the county fair. And then as we worked with the sheep, it seemed like I just tended more to towards them. So I began to pick out a couple of lambs that became my project, and kept building my herd up a little bit at a time. But I guess I learned a few things at least about feeding them and taking care of them, and that became my project for the rest of my time in 4-H. In the last 5 years, at least I learned how to feed them, because I had the market lamb champion, which that's the one that you take to slaughter. And I was thinking about that one that was spoken about earlier. And by the way, I've had one leg of lamb. I've never had a lamb that I raised, that we've never eaten the lamb that we raised. Unless you've been there, it's you don't really quite understand it, because there is at least for me, there was a different kind of connection than there was with any other kind of animal. So as I graduated then from 4-H and went on, I had my own herd then, and then when Mary and I got married 56 years ago, we moved my small herd over to the farm where we still are. We're in the same place we were when we got married. And I began to raise them there. And I raised them for the next 50 years. Not always a large herd. At one time, Dad and I had 144 head that we lambed. It becomes quite a task. If you have any understanding of what that's about. And when it got time that I knew it was time for me to sell my sheep, and I decided the year before I was going to, and I told Mary, I says, don't let me change my mind. Because they totally ruin 2 weeks of your life at lambing time, where you just don't get any sleep. This is especially true with our, shall I say, our more domesticated sheep, those that we tame and raise in just a little different way than probably they did in biblical times. Probably the main advantage that having raised sheep gives to me is that I understand some of the terminology and the examples, but that certainly doesn't make me an expert. If you ever in your life would have the opportunity to go to a sheep producers meeting, and there's one of the university professors there that claims to be an expert, don't believe it. Because there's only one that I know that really understands sheep. We don't. They are probably the most difficult of all sheep, or of all animals that I've had to try to understand. And I've been around quite a few different types. If they have problems, their symptoms are not always obvious. They probably have the highest mortality rate of any farm animal, except maybe chickens and turkeys, but of the four-legged kind, they probably have the highest mortality rate. There's a saying that if sheep look at you wrong, they probably have something wrong with them. And I heard Brother Wade Stanley make a comment at the meeting in Dean Avenue this spring that he'd been talking to someone about sheep, and he referred to sheep as something that was just looking to getting ready to die. They are so hard to really get a read on and understand. And probably by the time you find out what their problem is, it's too late. And I thought how true this is. When we think about our the work that we do together within the church, and the number of times that someone has had problems in their life and we really didn't know it, because those feelings, those problems can be masked so easy. And we'll say, if I had only known. So there's one way I think where we see some of the similarities between the two. Now, Brother Steve asked me if I was going to talk about John 10. I told him I was probably going to run over everybody's lesson. And I don't want that to discourage anyone, and from, because I'm, whatever Steve and Kyle had, I'm not going to be afraid to say something similar to that if it's appropriate. But I think the more we can talk about these things, the better we understand them, and the better it's going to be for all of us. In John chapter 10, Jesus refers to his followers as his sheep. In 1 John 2:25, he says, "You are like sheep going astray." Probably the number one question that people have asked me, and it's the one thing that I've tried to understand, is how are we like sheep? We want to know, how are we like sheep? And what I've come to discover, I believe anyway, is that's not the right question. The right question is, how do the sheep relate to the shepherd? If we don't know how to relate to the shepherd, we don't know how to relate to one another. And so, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. And the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanses us from all sins. What is it that makes us like sheep? Well, we could go through chapter 10 and try to analyze everything that's there. And I would say that, especially in chapter 10 of John and some other references also, the one thing that we don't want to do is like the parables. Sometimes we try to make everything in a parable fit something, and it doesn't always. I think that's true also with our understanding of sheep. We don't want to try to make everything fit. Sheep are first and foremost followers. You've got the picture. How do you go to sleep? Close your eyes, count sheep, because you can see those sheep jumping over the fence, one after the other, one after the other. And that's an accurate description of the way sheep generally function. They are followers. They are just an animal that's what they do. So we are all in some way followers of someone or something. Joshua said, choose you this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Jesus said, you cannot serve two masters. So, and has already been brought forth this afternoon, that sheep bond not only with the shepherd, but they bond with the voice of the shepherd. But they bond not only with the voice of the shepherd, they bond with the habits of the shepherd. If sheep follow the sound of a voice, they follow the sound of the things that the shepherd does. Choosing someone to follow sounds like the shepherd or what they think the shepherd looks like, but when they get to the end of the line, they find out that the shepherd is one that's in sheep's clothing. So sheep are more discriminating, really, than what we are. I could take you to our place. If you come to our place, and this happened many times, and I'm not sure whether there's any in here that, you know, some have been to my place. Okay, Steve has been there. Okay, and I could take you down to the gate where we had our sheep locked in, and I could call those sheep, and I can guarantee you they would come, at least if they were not in view, they would come and look, because they knew my voice. But if there was someone standing with me, they were going to stop, and they were going to look, because it was something they were not familiar with. But if I was by myself, they would come running to that gate, hoping to get through that gate or wherever it was that I was going to take them to be. You could try to sound like me all you want to, and it won't work. It just will not work. I bought a ram one time from a fella. He called him Yip Yip, because that's how he called him. He said, come Yip Yip. And it took me a long time before that ram finally got used to my voice saying that and calling him to me. And so you can disguise your voice all you want to. You can try to sound like me as much as you wanted to, and those sheep were never going to come to you. Now, we as people are not quite as discriminating. If it sounds like it's that voice, or it sounds very much the same, we many times will follow that. They are more discriminating than we are. Jesus said in John 10:27, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me." So we follow what we bond with. Yes, they each have their own personality, but they have a flock mentality. I told you they bond not only with the voice, but they bond with the habits of the shepherd. Generally, I had metal gates. Sometimes they weren't always metal, though. And those sheep could be completely out of sight. And I would open that gate and go through. Maybe I was going to go feed them or take care of something else. I would shut that gate back. I would go on about my business. I could turn around, and those sheep were at that gate, looking to see if it was open, wanting to go out and eat Mary's flowers, the garden, grass, or maybe even some dangerous things. There are plants that are poisonous to sheep. So not only that, they understand that the sounds that we make. They would know when I went to a certain area of the lot, that I would go in a building and there was a door there. I would go in that door. And sometimes I thought, I'm just going to be a couple minutes. I'll leave that door open and I'll be right back. And when I got back, that shed was full of sheep because there was feed in there. They knew by where I went, they knew by the sounds I made, not only of my voice, but just my being, just where I went and what I did. And they knew that that was something that they needed to check out. But sheep without a shepherd are not very discriminating. In every flock, there are some wanderers. And we already mentioned that Peter said you're like sheep going astray, as he quoted from the Old Testament. They have a tendency to get into circumstances that it's difficult for them to get out of. You have to kind of understand the habits of sheep, especially when they're on grass. They walk as they eat. And their nose is down to the ground. They're not looking at where they're going. They're not looking at what's around them or what's happening. But they're just eating and following their nose, the smell of the grass or whatever. And it's not unusual for one of them, all of a sudden, to look up and they find out they're somewhere where they didn't know where they were. And they found out they've gotten in some kind of danger. And when that happens, they panic. And you don't know exactly what they're going to do. They lose their sense of where they really are. Now, I had to go to keeping my sheep up near the buildings because it was mentioned that they have no natural protection. When we first moved to the place where we are, I would send them out to the pasture where the cows were and let them graze out there. And occasionally there was one that would have a lamb out there. And through several years, that happened. I never did bring a lamb in from that pasture. The coyotes always got them. And so I learned that if I was going to be able to save those, I had to bring them into some kind of protection without protecting them so much that they couldn't continue to grow and to thrive. And so when I brought them in around the buildings and let them clean up the lots and so forth around there, it was usually a shed or a barn, something like that they would go in. It was not at all unusual for when I would come in to lunch at noon, and I would go back out and I would hear one running around just bellowing its head off because it had no idea where the other sheep were. They had been in the barn, sound asleep. The other sheep got up and left and went out to graze, and then all of a sudden that one woke up. Where is everyone else? Where have they gone? And they would run around just without any sense or reason at all, to what they were doing. They lose their way, they lost their contact with the shepherd, or with their, there were leaders within the flock. They would lose that contact with the leaders. Sheep need leaders. We've already had some instruction today given to us as what happened to Israel when they were without leadership, or what happened to them when their leaders were either wolves or hirelings, when they were left without protection. And I thought it was also interesting, as Kyle mentioned, the those under shepherds that were at the back of the flock. And this, I think, points out very clearly for us an illustration of how the leaders are developed within the body of Christ and how we see leaders developing. So there has to be leadership. The leaders of God's people always came from within. They were people that the flock knew. You can take Moses, example of Moses. He was raised as an Egyptian. Yet he was, when God came to him at the burning bush and told him to go to talk to Pharaoh and to lead his people out of Egypt, we find that he went to Moses, who still in his heart was an Israelite. He had the makeup of an Israelite. He was going to come from within those that were a part of the nation of Israel. You can look at Joshua, the judges, most of the judges except for Abimelech, whose mother was an outsider, the kings, the prophets, they were all recognized by the flock. And so the same is true of the leaders of the Lord's flock. They come from within. The leaders of the body of Christ do not step out and up into a position of prominence, but step out from the flock and step into the leadership of that flock. Not raising to a place of prominence, but rising from within, stepping out to lead the flock. Sheep must be led. They cannot be driven. And I think this will be illustrated a little bit more, especially when it comes to talking about the leaders of Israel. There, in Acts 1 and 21, when Matthias was chosen to replace Judas, it was said of him, "Therefore of these men who have accompanied and out from among us, beginning from the baptism of John to this day, when he was taken up from us, one of them must become a witness with us of his resurrection." The deacons in Acts 6 and 3, they were told on those seven deacons to seek out from among you those that had proven themselves. 1 Peter 5 and 2, "Shepherd the flock which is among you, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples of the flock." And then going back to John the 10th chapter 1 and 2, they were those that were recognized by the shepherds. Now, an example maybe of what I said earlier about not trying to make everything fit. This was something that maybe shouldn't have puzzled me as much as it did, but when it talked about a sheepfold, I knew what a sheepfold was, but I couldn't relate to it in quite the way that I know the shepherds in New Testament times could have. We didn't call them sheepfolds. It was just a pen or a lot. But the understanding was there, and it as accurately shown earlier today, it was a place where the sheep were brought in for the night, whether it be in the city or whether it may be one that was developed out in the open more. And those sheep were brought into that that sheepfold, and they were foaled for the night while the shepherd left them there in the care of the gatekeeper. And he would come in the morning then, and as a result of taking them out, he would call them, they would come to him, and he would lead them out that they might go out and come in and eat. So he was, when the shepherd came though, he came to the door, he came up front. He did not try to sneak in through the side. Did not try to come in, climb up some other way, but he was very much up front. And I think that's an important thing for us to notice, that when we're seeking out those who will lead us, we need those that are up front, those who are willing to be there to lead. There are three Greek words that, in at least in the Old King James, have been translated into six English terms that relate to the work of what we call the elder. And I'd like to mention those just a little bit because I think it relates to what we're talking about. The word elder and presbytery come from the same Greek word, which is presbyteros, which indicates mature spiritual experience and understanding. And I was thinking about this when we were talking about many times, if we're talking about parenting, we're talking from the perspective of what we have experienced and what we know we ought to do now. And I think this is why, when we're talking about elders, they need to be those that are mature, spiritually mature, and mature in their judgment, because not because they have done everything right. I was trying to think of there's a saying, it says, don't follow your elders because they're always right, but follow them because they have more experience at being wrong. And you think about that, that's true. So you don't want people who have made a habit of doing things wrong in their life, but by the same token, you want people who are experienced, who know that they haven't always done things right, and they've shown that commitment to serving the Lord in a way that will be beneficial, and you can have confidence that they have learned and understood the things that they need to have that spiritual experience, that spiritual understanding. And then the words bishop and overseer, episkopos, and so those are the guardians of souls, one who watches over their welfare to superintend, and then the other two, which are pastor and though shepherd is never used, in at least in the Old King James, as a noun, but is used in as a verb, to feed, nourish, manage herdsmen. And it's interesting to note that in Acts, the 20th chapter, in verse 17, and also in verse 28, in speaking to the elders at Ephesus, that Paul uses all three of those terms in relating to the same people. That also happens in 1 Peter 5, 1 and 2, where all three terms relate to the same leaders, but it just tells us the different types of experience that they bring, the leadership. There's more than just getting out in front. There's the active part of our being, which in order that we might lead and help those of the flock to serve the Lord in a way that profits Him. But on all of these terms, nowhere do we find where one assumes a self-serving position or the position of a hireling. What we have is a discharge of responsibilities to the flock for which they must answer. In Hebrews 13:17, obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give an account. It's an awesome responsibility, but it's one that needs to be done. And so in 1 Timothy 3:1, before Paul addresses the qualifications, he addresses the man's attitude. The man desires the office of a bishop or a servant, he must desire. This is not an office, but it's a service. It's not a position that you place yourself in, but it's a position that you assume because there is a need. Now, Thayer's definition of desire is to stretch oneself out in order to reach. He knows shows a willingness to exert himself to grow in order to meet a need, of the church. The qualities that make up a leader must be there before they can be utilized. We're not appointing someone to become something, we're appointing them to be something and to grow in that. So as we look at these responsibilities, we find that being a shepherd is a service. It's not a right. You must earn the respect of the flock. You must show that you deserve to be followed by this flock. You cannot drive sheep. You can try as much as you want to. You will not drive them consistently and continue to have a flock. We'll talk about this a little bit more later. So being a shepherd is a service, not a right. Only one has earned the right to be called the good shepherd, and we know that's Jesus. And it's already been mentioned about the chief shepherd, Jesus Christ. He's also called the good shepherd who gave his life for us. The voice the flock will hear from their shepherds should be the voice of the chief shepherd. So that means that we need to know the chief shepherd very well, don't we? So as we go about in our service to the Lord, and in the choosing of those that will lead us, they must speak the same. They will not sound exactly like Jesus, but they will be speaking the things that he speaks. The pasture they feed in should be the one he purchased with his blood. So any other pasture contains dangers. I'll give you an example of that. I mentioned when Dad first got sheep. Again, we turned them out into a pasture where the dairy cows would go. We didn't know that we had nightshade in that pasture. But we soon did when we found some dead sheep. Because nightshade can be poisonous to them. So the shepherd must know the dangers that's there for the sheep. And so that means you're actively involved in trying to understand people, who they are, and what's going on in their life. So again, I mentioned that they are not very discriminating. Now the big difference between sheep and goats, and when Jesus said separate the sheep from the goats, there is a very significant difference between them. There may not be physically, but there is in their mentality. Sheep are very discriminating. There's certain things they will not eat. This brought about some of the wars in the West. The cattlemen didn't want the sheep in with the cows because they would eat down the good stuff, and then the cows were left with stuff that they didn't want either. Goats are totally undiscriminating. They'll eat anything. They can eat some of the poisonous things that sheep eat, and it won't affect them in the same way. And so we have to understand that how sheep must be separated from the world. We must understand how sheep must be separated from the world. We can't totally take people out of the world, but we need to be constantly reminding ourselves of how discriminating we need to be. And in the world that we live in, it's been the same always. It's more difficult at times. We've had our own circumstances even today. We must be aware of the dangers that are there, because there's going to be an accounting to the chief shepherd. When that accounting takes place, how many will be lost? Now, I think that's probably one of the things that haunts elders more than anything else, is when you stop and think about the number of people that have left for the body of Christ. It's somehow you just don't forget many of them, because it's something that just like the shepherd taking care of his physical sheep, there is a connection there that you just can't quite explain. And I think that's also true of the shepherds of Christ's flock. There should be a connection there to which you never let go completely. There has to become a time when you understand that it's time to move on, as was mentioned earlier. So there is a trust that develops between the shepherds and the flock in order for the flock to thrive. So if I'm going to follow someone, I want to know where they're going. I want to know what it is that they're feeding me with. Have they proven themselves to be trustworthy? Think about the flock as that shepherd came to the gate of the sheepfold, and he called for his sheep, and they did recognize his voice, and he would take them out, and he would take them out to the hillside. How much trust they had in him to take them where they need to go, where they could feed, where they could drink, and this sort of thing. So there was a blind faith, though. Our faith doesn't need to be a blind faith. Shepherds must also be able to trust the flock. Have you ever thought about the 99 and the one that was gone? What were the 99 doing while the shepherd was looking for the one? there had to be a trust there. The shepherds had to believe that they had prepared the flock for whatever it was they might encounter while he was gone looking for that one, to prepare them for difficult circumstances, that when a problem needed to be dealt with, the rest of the flock does not feel abandoned. In other words, that the flock is informed. The flock must be informed. A passage that I think is a companion passage to talking about desiring the leadership of the flock is found in 1 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, and 31st verse. Different subject, but there's the same meaning that's there, where he says, covet earnestly the best gifts. New King James says, earnestly desire. NIV, eagerly desire. What was the subject of chapter 12? It was how each part of the body is important to the profitability of the whole. There is no one most important ability. They are all important. They all carry their own weight and must be treated as such. So the eldership is not the only work where many of these qualities are profitable. And so these are qualities that ought to be developing in everyone, where we desire not necessarily for a particular gift, but for the desire to develop that gift which God has given us. It may be that being a leader in the sense of the eldership may never come our way because we have not been equipped to do that. So in looking at this role of the eldership, there's a need to grow into that role. Or I should say, grow in that role. We are to develop it, and then we are to grow in that role. There's a saying, I don't particularly like commencement speeches, but a couple of years ago I was one, and I happened to be listening at just the right moment, I guess, and this person made a statement that really stuck with me, and I just can't forget it. If serving is below you, leading is beyond you. If serving is below you, then leading is beyond you. So this work of leading a flock is a service. It has I like to refer to them as servant leaders. The purpose of the office is found in Ephesians, or the work is found in Ephesians, the 4th chapter, 11, 12, and 13. We've been studying this quite heavily at home in looking at how the church developed and grew to became what it has. And the purpose is for the equipping of the saints for the work of the ministry. Some people divide that into two. The scripture doesn't do that. It's for equipping the saints for the work of the ministry. That's a word for all of us. Not equipping the elders for the work of the ministry. It's equipping the saints for the work of the ministry and for the edifying of the body, or the building up of the body. And so there's a responsibility for the flock to be informed. There's a need for the flock to know where their food is coming from, what expectations are. Should not withhold from the flock those things that they need in order to be a good follower. A shepherd's desire is to oversee proper spiritual growth, to bring to maturity, to maintain good spiritual health, and to seek the wanderer. One of the things that I often did, especially probably the 2 weeks before lambing time, or maybe more so like a month before, when I would feed them, and there was we learned the hard way too, that there were some things that were very necessary in order for them to give birth more easily and to have the strong lambs. And I can't tell you what the term is, but if they lack sugar, we fed them molasses, they would become weak, and some of them would go down and could never stand up until they had their lambs, and sometimes that was too late again also. And so I would feed them, and then I would just stand around and look at them, watch them. You know, were their ears down like they were scared, or were their ears down like there was something wrong? did one stand off by itself while the other were eating? And they all have their personalities also, and it's very much like that. And probably follow that up after lambing time by watching them. And again, was there a problem with the mother? Maybe there was a problem with the with milking. Or watch the lambs. Were they growing? Did they look skinny? What was it? What was going on with them? There is a need to observe. That's what the overseership part of it is. It's observation and seeing what's going on. So if we do this and we're able to rescue someone before it becomes too late, we can see that the reward is not in the position, but it's in the service. So to desire the office or the overseership for any other reason is self-seeking and a misuse of the God-given ability. One is not motivated correctly. I know you're going to get, I think at least, you've had a little bit of this already, and we'll get more of it tomorrow, about the neglectful shepherds of Israel. I'm just going to mention Brother Calvin sent me, I think, most of the scriptures that was going to be used, and I don't want to go into them in depth, but he mentioned Ezekiel 34, and I think that's already been mentioned, and where it talked about, I will require my flock at their hand. Doesn't that really fit together with Hebrews 13 and 17? You know, the Old Testament teaches us a lot of things. The leaders are going to have to answer for what has or has not happened. And that takes us back to Ephesians 4, where the church is to be edified, is to be built up, is to be strengthened. Then you had in Jeremiah where they were neglectful of their work, and he rebuked them. Jeremiah 50 had not given them a direction. He gave them no rest, just keep them driving, and just wore them out, and they need to rest. As far as that, Jeremiah 23, it talks about them being destroyed and scattered. That's driving them. I mentioned earlier, there's two things going to happen when you drive sheep. One is they're going to scatter. And they may end up eventually in some other flock. And so you have to be careful that you don't wear them out. You'll destroy them or you'll scatter them because of harshness, because of hardness. The sheep, I've seen sheep just absolutely just lay down and wouldn't move. That's just the type of animal they are. You can take them to a point where there's no more. There's nothing left. They have to be treated with care and respect. He warns us in Zechariah 11 of being idle or lazy, leaving the flock alone. Ezekiel 34 again mentioned the internal struggle, which is a warning to shepherds, and gives us good reason why God has established multiple shepherds, hence a warning. We remember Diotrephes, who wanted to have the preeminence. So no matter what our stewardship is, we're going to be accountable for it. I think I'm going to, this will probably be a good place for me to take a break. And I do want to get into a little bit, we'll do a little bit more on the personality of sheep, but I do want to get into a little bit into leadership in general, because I think it relates to what kind of spiritual leadership we get. So